this is going to sound just dead simple, but like you have to create a bunch of value for people. Like I think if you're doing good stuff, you are trusted to do more good stuff. So like you need to find small wins and turn them into big wins. I think this actually comes back a little bit to the data modeling stuff. There is sometimes foundational work that you need to do. I don't want to like undermine, like maybe your stuff is a mess and you need to get stuff fixed. If you are a data person that joins a new company, go find stuff to fix.
Welcome to the Data Tea, our monthly podcast on the news, trends, and technology transforming data today. We're your hosts, Armand Petrosian and Satish Jayanthi, the co-founders of Coalesce. Let's get started.
All right, there we go. I always love that music. So if that's your first call, I hope you enjoy it. People start trickling in, but we can get started. I am really excited for this episode of the Data Tea. We've got a very special guest, Colin Zima, the founder of what I think is one of the hottest data companies right now, which is Omni. So Colin, maybe a quick introduction, and then me and Satish can start to ask you some questions, but we'd love to just hear from you, your bio, and then we can get rolling.
Yeah, Colin Zima, CEO, one of the founders of Omni. We've been building about three and a half years at this point, just trying to reinvent data analytics. So I spent the last 8 years at Looker, after being a very early customer there, where I led product, customer success, and analytics over different periods. And a lot of what we're trying to do is bring all of the good stuff about, highly centralized BI, Looker, software development lifecycle for data analysts, and combine it with the stuff that, like Tableau, Excel, these decentralized tools did really well. And we're trying to put it all in one platform. Obviously a little bit of AI in there too, but kind of trying to do everything at the same time.
Amazing. I've got a handful of questions for you, but before I jump into it, Satish, maybe you want to introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. I'm Satish Jayanthi, CTO, co-founder at Coalesce. Well, excited to have a chat with you, Colin, today.
Cool. And I'm the CEO and co-founder of Coalesce. So thanks again, Colin, for joining us. You got such a rich background and a great history. I was fortunate enough to catch up with you at one of the events you guys hosted at the Sweet 16 games for March Madness, which was a ton of fun. But the super interesting thing, and something that I find that we share, both Satish and I, we came from a past life of a product that was very similar to what we introduced to the market with Coalesce. And you did the same thing at Omni, but on a very different scale, given it was Looker in the past and in a different category of the stack. And so I would just love to hear a little bit about what was the founding journey like for you? I'm sure you had a bunch of connections with people from that Looker background, including customers. But can you just talk us through what the early stages of inception were for Omni?
Yeah. So even going back way before that, so I actually started a company with one of my co-founders here. And okay. I like to sort of jokingly say that our product thesis was that Jamie and Colin needed to start a company. And it turns out that that's actually a pretty difficult thesis to build a company on. So we ended up selling it to Hotel Tonight, kind of didn't go anywhere. We were Looker's first customer or fourth customer. I grew really close with the team. I mean, the nice thing about going back to the same space is, I was with Looker for 8 years, a couple years post-acquisition. And that's sort of what gave me the space to reflect and sort of think about hey, what do I wish that we had done a little bit differently? And the nice thing about re-entering the space is you know exactly how to go build everything. You have this foundational understanding of what was great about the product. But also I think if you reflect, you can also see the things that were really frustrating about the product. So looking at Looker specifically, when I was a customer, I, for example, gave everyone at Hotel Tonight admin access to our instance. So when they asked me a one-off question that I didn't have modeled, I would write them a piece of SQL and hand it to them and say, go run this query anytime you have this question again. Wow. And it was always this this frustration of appreciating the beauty of what Looker did and sort of centralized data modeling and sort of what LookML was. But at the same time, just this frustration with not being able to move really quickly and, do Excel stuff, do SQL stuff. And so it was really easy to say, I know this whole ecosystem. There's not a product that's actually trying to do both of these things. Maybe we can go do this. Mm-hmm. And then the sort of complementary advantage was I had a network of customers and, people that I worked with in the past who also knew this space and, on the sort of engineering side could go build. It's really nice to take an engineer that built a system that took them 9 months at Looker and then have them turn around at Omni and build the same thing in like 3 days. And then, you know, like customers that trust us. So I had spent, you know, 6-8 years talking to, I don't know, like probably 3,000 or 4,000 customers and built enough trust that I could call some of them on the phone and say like, hey, please come try our thing. Like, I swear it's actually good. And that was sort of the early, that was what created our early traction, was just people that probably trusted me and us more than the product that gave us time to actually build a good product.
Sounds familiar, Satish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we went through a very similar journey as well, Colin. I always feel so grateful that what I say is we were able to shave off probably like 1 or 2 years of the beginning stages of the startup journey. It sounds like you had the same thing. You had a clear vision. So you had a lot of clarity to know that you were going to find product market fit. And then you had a bunch of relationships where people trusted that you were going to build this next generation technology based on how you treated them as a partner throughout your career. So,
yeah, it's like I tell this to all early stage founders. It's like your product doesn't need to prove itself for a while. They can just trust you to solve their problem. And then the product can go figure it out later. Like if you have someone living in your product every day and you're smart and can build, you'll figure out ways to go productize it. But like our first customer, I was essentially the data analyst for like 6 months. Yeah. And it was more me validating our product and just doing data analytics. Like I probably could have picked up Tableau or Looker and they would have been just as happy as customers, but it was like sort of me. And then the product actually built into a place where it was actually solving these problems on its own.
Yeah. I mean, and clearly they trusted you for good reason. You obviously raised a massive round recently. So congratulations on that. It's been awesome to watch your growth. And if I remember correctly, I think you guys launched just a few months after we came out of stealth. So like around the same time you guys entered market. So it's been really rapid. And the feedback I've heard from Omni users is that they're really satisfied. So
appreciate great it. Job.
Hats off to you.
Try our best.
any lessons from the time at Looker that you were able to carry through or carry over, or maybe like things that you wish you would have done differently that you brought to Omni?
I mean, I think there's like the cultural company building ones, and then there's a bunch of product ones. So I mean, on the product side, it was always the same sort of core thesis of like centralization is good and you don't want to repeat yourself, you know, like dry software engineering practices are good. Doing that in front of answering a one-off question is not good. And sort of like finding balance in the product was always sort of one of those core things. I mean, there's a bunch of tactical examples. At Looker, we wrote our own language to do table calculations. Okay. So like, you know, you had to learn the special language, which was still very effective. I always felt like pangs of regret that we didn't just copy Excel. Like Excel created a perfect table calculation, or not a perfect one, a ubiquitous one.
Sure.
And so that was an example where we just said like, hey, let's take Excel and just do the Excel stuff. So there's a lot of sort of like product learnings. I mean, I think another one is like performance is a superpower. So you need to treat application performance as sort of like the most important feature in the whole product. And that's something we spent a lot of time on. I mean, I think on the company building side, we've done a couple things just a little bit differently around sort of how we show up in sort of the market. So like one example is we started getting together every Friday and doing these demos as a company. So we have the whole engineering team, you know, not every engineer presents every Friday, but on any given day, we might have 10 people, you know, like take 2 minutes and show a feature that we're working on. We started clipping them and putting them on the internet. And we have about 850 videos on YouTube now of just everything that we've built over the last 2 years. And it's like some of these little cultural things that we have sort of accidentally invented by, you know, like starting at the tail end of COVID and being somewhat remote. Those have been a lot of the like really big carriers for us. So like we're a multi-tenant cloud service. We ship 20 times a day. That was a big change from like a single tenant Looker deployment where we had people spread out over a whole bunch of different releases.
Yeah.
So it's little tactical stuff like that.
That's cool. Yeah. We used to do something similar. Every Friday was demo day and the engineers would do demos. And funny enough, one of my close friends, the CEO of a company called Unify, if you've ever heard of them, they've done a really good job building in public. So the CEO Austin talks about how building in public has been a big differentiator for them to raise awareness. And I remember actually our VP of finance, Nick, mentioning how cool it was that Omni publicizes those Friday calls. So I know firsthand that I've heard feedback from that. So super cool.
It's amazing. And like it lets our customers even come along as we build. Like we'll have people that watch a video and are like, hey, I was thinking about it this way. Have you guys considered that? And sometimes like, yeah, we have. And they're like, cool, great. And sometimes like, no, we haven't. And then it's like, hey, can we talk to you a little bit? It sort of like lets everyone participate in the development of the product, which is amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Despite the success, is there anything that you wish you would have done differently during the early stages at Omni? Like any lessons learned there that you felt like, oh, okay, I should have saw that coming, or I should have known this.
I really should probably come up with a canned response to this because I don't have one off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Honestly, the biggest thing is like for the first year, I think the biggest one was just sort of expectation setting. Like I thought we were going to start selling product 3 months into the company. Yeah. And like, that's just not how it worked at all. It like really took us kind of like 18 months to build enough that we could replace existing BI tools. So I think just understanding that earlier might've been helpful because, it helped us sort of understand the gates of when we had enough product that we could exist. But like in some ways we had to sort of stumble through it. Like if you look at the first 6 months of the product that we had, and this is like before we had any customers in it, we released and reversed a whole bunch of different decisions. Like the early product was about parsing SQL and sort of building the data model magically. Yeah. And then we put that in front of customers and they were like, we don't want the magic. Like, we want control and we want it to touch the SQL, but like, you got to stop doing things on my behalf without me asking. I'm not sure that we could have just known that without sort of trying. So it's big into release and learn. Like that is how we do stuff, is we put it out. Maybe it's right. Maybe it's wrong, but it's out. And then if the customer tells us we're wrong, we go fix it.
I totally get that. Satish and I, you know, when we came out of Stealth, very similar feeling, right? Like it takes time for people to buy a product anyways. And we had even spent about a year in R&D just building our product prior to coming out of Stealth. And I remember like the first 3 months, there was a ton of interest, but there weren't really many contracts getting signed. And then it started to take off like 3 or 4 months later. And so people were asking on the team, like, hey, should we be worried right now? I was like, no, it's going to be fine. But like, it was a little nerve wracking.
Same deal for me. Like I told the story, like we had a cohort of 5 trials that I was certain that we were going to win all of them. And these were going to be like our 2nd through 6th customers. So this is like pretty early. Yeah. And then we ended up losing all of them. And it was, but like in some ways it was really helpful because it was just a bunch of customers being like, I love the ideas here, but it's not good enough yet. And kind of amusingly, out of that group of 5, 3 of them became customers 12 months later. Like they did it, they bought another product, they hit a renewal, and then they came back. But it was one of those things where it's like, we sort of had to hear it. We had to hear people be like, hey, it's not good enough yet. And it's like, great, what do we need to do? Let's go fix it. I don't know. I think we've been stumbling forward pretty effectively.
That's great. I love that. This is actually a good segue. The BI space, I think a lot of people would argue, is super crowded, but you found a really nice part of that and taken a part of that pie, and it's quickly growing. Can you tell us a little bit about what's different competing in the BI space now in 2025 compared to what it was like a decade ago when you were at Looker? Yep. Because, you know, a lot of the companies got acquired, but then there's other players that are new and it's, there's a lot of options.
There's actually a bunch of different attributes that made it really different. So when I talked about selling 3 months in, when I bought Looker the first time, you had to build the data model in the command line, literally in the terminal, and there was no dashboards. It was a very skinny product, but because there was nothing else that was sort of like doing modern data modeling, you know, like it was like business objects or Looker, and you were able to deliver a much skinnier product just because the idea of cloud data warehouses was relatively new, and this idea of sort of like modern data modeling was relatively new, tying things to Git. These were all like concepts that data engineers were not doing at all, like, or data analysts were not doing at all. I think the other really big thing looking back 10 years was there was no Fivetran and Stitch. Right. So selling Looker to people, we often had to walk them into one of those two to get data into the warehouse, because this idea of, you know, like ETL warehouse transformation BI didn't exist yet. That was not the modern data stack had not coalesced. And I think now it's really different.
You guys created it. I mean, if I remember correctly, it was Snowflake, Fivetran, and Looker was the original modern data stack. Like that was
Yes. Like I do really think that and it was because Looker needed a database sitting there. And then when you had the database, you need to get data into it. And I would say now in 2025, everyone knows that you need those things. So it's like someone shows up and they're like, great, I know I need movement. I've got a database, I've got a transformation tool, and I need a BI tool. So we don't have to convince people of that anymore. Right. At the same time, on the BI side specifically, there's a whole bunch of open source now. Metabase didn't really exist. Superset didn't exist. Even Redash was just a much smaller tool. Now there's a lot of really cheap stuff out there that's actually pretty decent. And the sort of good and bad thing about it is that it has sort of further reinforced the idea that the value of a chart is zero. Making a chart is actually very easy. There's a lot of amazing products that can make charts for a very small amount of money. And so it reinforced this idea for us that we really need to be an enterprise data platform that can do a whole bunch of different things that can actually really solve meaningful business problems for people. But I think the way that manifested for us is that we had to build a lot more product before we could get out there. We couldn't exist as some corner because there was all this sort of low-end stuff that could fill a niche, and we needed to be differentiated enough from it. And so that's really why it took us, 12, 18 months to say hey, no, we actually can replace Looker now. Right. But I think it required us to get to that level before we got there. So in some ways, customer way more mature, but market simultaneously a little bit more competitive as well. The other part is obviously AI is a part of every conversation now. You do need some answer to sort of how you future-proof the stack. Mm-hmm. And the probably most important thing for us is Looker exists now. So, Looker was this counterposition to Tableau that was sort of the only modern Cody, data tool. And now there are other tools that are doing that we have to go compete with. So it's we need to be able to articulate our value a lot better and do things like that. I would argue we just had to build a way better product, to be perfectly honest. But given that we've already sort of done that, I think that it's put us in a much better place as a company.
That makes sense. And by the way, I know I'm asking all the questions. If anybody in the audience has anything they're curious about for Colin, feel free to message. And Satish, if you've got anything, feel free to go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Colin, so you mentioned about data modeling. I'm just curious to learn about your take on generally data modeling. I mean, it's been around for so long, people stopped doing it and started doing it, and everybody has a different opinion about it.
Yep.
Just want to see what your take is. Yeah.
I think as you could sort of take away from how we've built Omni, it's my point of view on everything related to data is just sort of ruthless pragmatism. I strongly believe that you should try to cut every reasonable corner that you can. And that doesn't mean sort of build everything on a terrible foundation and make everything a mess. It's just, I think a lot of data people find comfort in perfection. It's it's a very objective user that likes sort of elegance, well-designed systems. And there's a time and a place for that. The canonical example is if you're getting Salesforce data out via your API, you don't want the deleted records there. You don't want your internal IDs polluting so that when someone pulls a number, they accidentally get your internal metrics or something like that. So you need to do foundational cleanup. And again, I believe that the bronze, silver, gold tier stuff can make sense in certain use cases. I think at the same time, if you're doing the same thing, if you're doing that process for every single thing that exists, you're making everyone wait on doing things that they might be able to do literally right now. So. Right. I really believe in sort of differentially approaching different types of data sets. Your finance should be really manicured, clean, sort of, user proof. We're actually having this debate now, which is the way that we account for ARR. If you just take a sum of ARR, it includes churns right now. That's bad, even if I can model around it, because it means that users will accidentally pull the wrong metric. So we're going through the how do we collect this data? How do we model it? How do we make it so that if you just ask for ARR, you cannot screw it up.
Right.
I think that's a great example of doing good investment in data modeling. We've got product analytics that just dumps in JSON blobs of everything. Going through any thought process to try to like manicure that data and star schema it or kind of whatever, mm-hmm. I think would be a gigantic waste of time, because like the schema might change by the time you fix it. And really all I'm trying to do is like count the number of bar charts versus line charts, see how many people are using new feature XYZ. So like, I really think the most important thing that people can do is think hard about where they're spending their time and whether it is sort of meaningfully advancing the value of the business that you work at versus like creating a more elegant foundation that sort of feels good. So it's like, it's a little bit unpopular, but I really believe pragmatic, like get it out as quickly as possible. If it's slow, let's go transform and figure out how to foundationally make it fast and smarter and more governed and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, the reason why people started hating data modeling because they were looking for perfection. And they would spend so much time trying to model it perfectly and lose sight of the business need. And then there is this, you know, perception that's created that if you model, you're going to take too long. So just skip all that, go straight. That's also bad. But again, to your point.
But that's exactly it. It's like then people jump to the other side and they're like, no data models for anything. And you're like, no, that's not what I'm saying either. It's just like, think about the time. I think the other thing that's sort of related, and this is like a problem with data analysts in general as well, mm-hmm. that like I think people need to work on, is just thinking about why you're doing the work that you're doing. Like too often data people are comfortable sort of stepping away and being like, I was asked to make a dashboard, so I made the dashboard. Right. And that needs to shift to like, I was asked to make this dashboard to answer X, Y, and Z. And I have formed an opinion on X, Y, and Z by building this thing that I can demonstrate through the dashboard. So I always remember this example at Looker. We were doing a giant repricing and I was like, hey, can I have a bunch of different cuts? Like we have to go figure out our pricing tiers. Walked into the meeting and I was like, okay, great. What should we do? And the team was like, I don't know. And I was like, guys, I obviously can go figure out the answer to this and I'm going to decide it. So it's my problem. But like what we're actually trying to do here is figure out our pricing strategy, not make a bunch of charts about pricing strategy. And I think that same sort of problem injects its way into data modeling and data engineering. And again, like not true of everyone always, but people always need to stop and reflect and be like, why am I doing this work? Like, is the sloppy thing, even though it feels worse for me, a little bit better right now so I can go move on and do the next thing? Or am I going to do the same thing 5 times and then I should do the work right now? Mm-hmm. And that's like, that is what I want to see analytics engineers and data analysts doing more is sort of thinking about that before they go do the thing that they do.
Yeah. It's like a first principles perspective of like, why are we doing this in the first place? Like we should be asking that question. I would also argue, you know, one of the core differentiators of Omni, from my understanding, is the semantic layer component, and that should imply some level of governance as well, right?
Exactly. So, yes.
So maybe not from like an enterprise data modeling standpoint, but certainly from at least a consumer standpoint, you can provide some governance there that 100%. Helps eliminate the full need for data modeling as a whole, at least to the extreme.
And like again, you're never going to completely eliminate it. It's like even if you have a perfectly modeled Omni environment, there's going to be stuff that you want to pick up and put back into a transformation pipeline. Like you don't want to do everything at query time, but starting at query time is not a bad place. Like get the answer and then be like, oh, this query takes 8 seconds. Like it should take 10 milliseconds or something like that. Like that is the process versus like, hey, let's go pre-optimize this thing, make it perfect, and then realize that it was like wrong.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm curious, you brought up something around about AI and the importance of it, like having a proper talk track there in functionality. Yep. It continues to come up with your prospects and customers, I'm sure. Yep. What is your take on it and how Omni is related to it?
You can sort of see this undertone in the sort of the way that I talk, but a lot of it is just sort of like, our thinking has evolved and a lot of my thinking flows from just my actual point of view. So. Yeah. When we started Omni, I very much thought text-to-SQL and sort of all the AI stuff I was very dismissive of it in data analytics. It was like, it'll never be as smart as a data analyst. It's cute for demos, but like it's wrong.
Right.
We put a little bit of it in the product anyway, and we actually had some customers pick it up and start using it. This is actually an embedded customer. They picked it up, they put it in front of like a bunch of hotel managers, and they were like, oh, we really like this. And it was one of those things where like they had to say it to us 15 or 20 times before I was like, okay, I don't believe you, but I will go look at it. And yeah. Me and Ariel, who runs product here, we actually spent a day trying to tune up our internal instance for AI. And the outcome was actually that I thought it was quite good.
Yeah.
And so it was one of these funny moments where it was like, I had to sort of feel it to believe it. And kind of following a bunch of that, or I mean, we were sort of doing this anyway, but I think I've become more supportive of it over time. We've like put a bunch of investment into improving it and sort of building metadata around it. And I think the sort of interesting thing that we said the whole time is that I think people undervalued how important semantics are in doing right. AI things. Like on the one hand, it's kind of unbelievable what just like putting an NLP on top of a database can do. It can actually answer most questions and like do unbelievable stuff. It just is a black box. And it's really hard if you just stick a black box to write 200 lines of SQL to trust anything that it says, because you can't sort of tune the results easily. You can't decompose it. You can't deconstruct it. It turns out that's exactly what a semantic layer is doing. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, our semantics and like data modeling, when I say data modeling, I mean like our version of data modeling, becomes almost like a debug layer for mm-hmm. how, or a citation layer for how AI actually works. And that has been an incredibly powerful message for us. Like Snowflake built a semantic layer to go power some of this stuff. Like everyone's yep. coming around to this idea that's like, hey, you need semantics. And it's like, cool. We got kind of lucky because our superpower is creating semantic layers. Like that is the sort of bread and butter of the product that we have. So we're just sort of leaning into that. And I think it will become a pretty core complement. Like I still don't use it if I'm trying to do like a high precision piece of SQL. You know, right. like if I'm doing analytics and I need to tune things, I'm going to go touch queries and like do things the old way. Like the idea of a lookup dashboard now is crazy to me, because I like once a day I pop in and I'm like, who is the account team for customer XYZ?
Right.
And it can answer that kind of question in 1 second with no clicks.
Totally.
And so it's like, I think it's sort of climbing a maturity curve. We'll see how far it goes. I don't think it replaces everything, but agreed. I do think that the semantic layer is really, really powerful for it.
Yeah. And in your defense too, I had similar feelings. I think both Satish and I did around text to SQL in the early stages, but it's just grown so quickly. The maturity has been really rapid, and
yep.
it has, yeah, it's exceeded expectations pretty fast.
It has. And I think the other thing that I've sort of grown to appreciate is like, the times where AI works best, and I mean this in like a more generalized sense,
yeah,
is when you can sort of touch and feel and interact with the results. Like if you had to ask AI to write a story and you couldn't touch any of the words in the story, it's good, but it's not great. Like what makes it great is you can then like take that as a first cut of your blog post and then reformat it and adjust it. And I think in data that is also true. And it's why text to SQL is really hard. Because if I'm a marketing manager and it comes in and writes me 500 lines of SQL, I can't edit that. Like I can't tune it. If it decomposes like 3 subqueries and there's UI attached to them and it's got a set of filters, like that is the citation version of data. And so like tying it back to the UI is actually really, really important. And I don't think that we're ever going to get away from that, because that little micro follow-up of like filtering for a slightly different way or sorting. And I know this sounds trivial, but I think that interaction with the AI is what makes it so powerful actually.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's the back and forth interaction to fine tune the, you know, what you want to do.
Exactly. And like mm-hmm. sometimes language is not the best way to fine tune.
Yeah.
Like the example I always give is like, if I'm searching for sneakers on Amazon, I will probably type in shoes and I'll go to the shoes page, but then you're going to use structured filters to like filter for 10 and a half Nikes, because yeah. that's the shoe that I want. And like, I don't want to do that in a search box. Like I want a structured search that locks those fields. And I think that is the, like the AI UI interaction that will become normal everywhere, is like, you can use text, but you've got refinement through UI.
That makes sense. I've got a few more questions. Well, one thing I'm just curious about generally, do you have any Do you have any hot takes on the data industry as a whole? Like anything that you feel is a controversial opinion or something that people disagree with you on often?
I mean, I think that probably the one that I say the most frequently is like, it's going to sound stupid, but like, I think being right about data is not that important usually. Like, I think you're trying to get directionally correct more than people realize.
Yeah.
So like a canonical example is like, I need my revenue to be correct. Like I want ARR to be right. And like, you know, I want what I put in my board deck. I don't want my board to sue me because it has changed over time. when I'm looking for like the proportion of my customers on different data warehouses,
yeah,
the absolute number doesn't matter. Like what is a customer doesn't matter. I'm looking for like a relative proportion of those things, or I'm looking for like a list of names because I'm going to go do a thing with it. And so like, I think so much of the experience of building a good environment is sort of simplifying and again, like cutting corners effectively to get most of the way to your answer and then sort of moving on and doing the thing that you're trying to do. So like, this idea of essentially trying to cut every possible corner as a data person, I think is like a very, very unpopular way of thinking.
Yeah.
But I think that I think that more people need to be a lot more sloppy about how they're doing their work if they want to be effective, which again, like I'm exaggerating my point of view here. Like you need to be right and stuff like that, but you need to think about why you're doing the thing that you're doing.
For sure. That makes sense. And also the term right or correct can be different to different people, right? It can be defined differently. So looks like we got a question. So this hot take was hot, but how do you know you're directionally right versus totally in the wrong? This is from Leon.
I think that's actually the hard part, if we're being honest, because like, again, if you missed a join and like you're counting trials versus customers or something like that, I'm like, we're beating this analogy to death. You need to understand enough about the data that you have underneath you that you can actually debug those things. But I think like the example that I would give is anytime a data person, like a smart data person that's been in a company for a while, pulls a data set and the answer doesn't match their expectation, I would bet that usually they reject the data before they reject their pre-existing point of view. It's like, okay, something is wrong in here. It doesn't line up with sort of my point of view. You have to have some understanding of the data that sits underneath you.
Right.
But again, like the level of precision is usually the unimportant part of it. So like if I'm counting customers on a dialect and it's really hard for me to join in like partner versus customer into that data set, it doesn't matter. Like don't go do that work. Don't spend an extra 30 minutes trying to figure out that join. That's right. Sort of the example that I'm talking about. You still need to understand the context of your data and like affirm that it's correct and do things like that. You know, like if canceled orders are in every single one of your e-commerce analysis, you know, make sure that stuff is not there. But like, if I'm pulling a number of customers for my pitch deck, it doesn't matter whether it's 250 or 300 or whatever. Like, I'm going to just pick the number anyway. You're trying to get an order of magnitude correct. So it's all I'm really saying is like, understand the problem that you are asking and sort of the attributes of a quality response before you go do the thing that you're doing.
Yeah. My statement on that would just be, it comes down to collaboration. So you're going to know that you're directionally right based on the feedback you get from the people who are going to be consuming that and the ones that made the request in the first place, and working together should be the key focus. And that's unfortunately not super common in some data teams, especially at large enterprise, is
like
they ship off a request, they go and do it mindlessly, and then they send it back, and then there's no feedback loop.
Yes. There's another extremely important caveat here, which is like, I think this point of view is also not something that you can employ if you don't have a lot of trust in your organization. You know, like if you don't if you're eight layers away from the CEO and you're like making sloppy decisions, that person might not trust you to be able to do things like this. But I would argue inversely, if you're a thought partner for the company and a place that people go to understand, you know, like how the business works, and just make yourself more effective. And so like, then directionally, like explain why directionally correct is good. And, you know, like I could answer your question with precision in a week, or I could give you an answer in the next 15 minutes. that starts explaining like the trade-offs of these things and how you create value. But like, you do need to have trust in your organization.
Yeah. Any feedback, any thoughts on how to build that trust, Colin? Just how common are data teams considered thought partners, and how do you go about gaining trust in the C-suite from your standpoint?
This is going to sound just dead simple, but like, you have to create a bunch of value for people. I think if you're doing good stuff, you are trusted to do more good stuff. So like, you need to find small wins and turn them into big wins. I think this actually comes back a little bit to the data modeling stuff.
Yeah.
There is sometimes foundational work that you need to do. I don't want to like undermine, you know, like maybe your stuff is a mess and you need to get stuff fixed. If you are a data person that joins a new company, go find stuff to fix. And it's probably not like making it, I'm underselling Omni here, but it's like, it's probably not swapping out your BI tool and making a better self-service environment. It's right. Like, it's figuring out how to make support more effective. It's, you know, improving marketing ROI, and like the tools will follow those things. But like, when I joined Hotel Tonight, and granted, like small company, like tiny role, I just dipped into every org and tried to make it work a little bit better. Nice. And like, it's hard if you're, again, like if you're at Walmart and you're, you know, 19 tiers down from the CEO, you probably don't have space to do things like that. But you're in some team in some org that has hired you because they think that you can advance some problem sets for them. Right. Go advance those things and you will get space to do more.
That makes sense. Satish, were you going to ask something?
No.
Cool.
I was just, kind of relating and resonating with what Colin has been saying. In my experience, it was the same thing. You know, how to build trust is, you know, work with the business and, you know, provide value in incremental fashion and then kind of slowly build that. And in my past life, where I was the other side, not the vendor, that's exactly, you know, how I found champions in business. Where they, you know, you make this, build these strong relationships, and then you can now kind of start educating the bigger part of the organization.
Yep. And like, paralleling that to like selling software and things like that, we've really tried to sort of reinforce with the team, like, we're trying to sell Omni, obviously, and we would love if you appreciate all of our technical complexity and depth, but ultimately, like, we're trying to make our buyers more successful inside their companies. And so like, this goes back to that first customer, like, I'm trying to make them use data better. And it's great if Omni is a vehicle for that. But like, ultimately, if someone comes and we can help them think about a problem a little bit better, like, that's just as valuable as providing good software to them. So I think especially as you're selling like enterprise software to higher level companies, like, we're trying to make our champions get promoted and be successful. Yeah. And like, it creates amazing alignment with your customer because, you know, like, everyone's trying to solve the same problem together then.
Yeah, that is always one of the most gratifying aspects of this job, is seeing somebody who made a bet on your product get promoted or get showcased internally at their organization. Yep. Or get a pay raise, whatever it might be. But I love seeing that. We've seen people become CIOs or become data engineering managers. And it's a cool part of the job, for sure, to be on the customer.
It's amazing.
Yeah. We got a couple minutes left. What should people know about Omni that is maybe proper, like sometimes misconceived, or like, are there any misconceptions you'd like to clarify for the audience?
I mean, I think the main one, and like, I would say that we push through this mostly, like, we're only 3 years old. So I think a lot of people are just like, oh, it's a startup. It's a young company. Like, we're 100 people, 50 of us were at Looker. And it's like 250 years of Looker.
Right.
Like, I think probably our experience stacks up against pretty much every company on the market. But like, we're in this sort of weird space where like, some people think that we've been around for 10 years and other people think that we're like way too young. So we're sort of straddling this. I don't know, like, I don't think people always know what to make of us and sort of how we exist in the ecosystem. But every customer that we make successful and like person that we make successful, you know, tells their friends, and that's been kind of the main way that we've scaled to date. So it's mainly just trying to like go compete with, you know, Looker's 15 years old and Tableau, it's I think 21 years old at this part. So like, it's the space is hard.
Yeah. Makes sense. I love it. So we've got a couple big events coming up. We got Snowflake Summit next week. Anybody who's interested in Omni or wants to meet you or meet your team, where can they find you?
So we've got a booth at Snowflake Summit. We've got a booth at Databricks. I will be around all 3 days of both. We are a bright pink company. So for anyone that that goes to either conference, we will probably be one of the more noticeable brands there. And the funny story there is we actually became a pink company on a whim going to the Snowflake conference the first time. Wow. We had the logo in a bunch of different colors. And Tam, who's one of our marketing leaders, just decided to make us pink t-shirts because it would stand out. And that's literally how we became a pink company. So look for the bright pink everywhere you go, and you'll find an Omni person.
I love it. Let's go pink. Yeah, we will also be at Snowflake Summit in a very big way. We're booth 1603. We got a bunch of customer sessions. Stop by. I'm sure I'll see you there, Colin. It'd be great to catch up in person. But this has been a ton of fun, man. Thank you for hopping on. It's always a pleasure.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And hats off to all the hard work you're doing at Omni. You guys are a great company, and it's awesome to watch the growth.
Same deal.
Cool.
Excited to grow up with you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.